Okay. Hello and welcome. My name is John Avery, and how I come about doing this session is that my wife and I and our family live in Saudi Arabia. I put the maps up here because sometimes I think it's, especially the cities I'm talking about in Saudi Arabia, it's difficult to know where they are. Saudi Arabia is one of the Arab countries, kind of the central Arab countries, located between Africa and the main part of Asia. They call it part of Asia, but it's really a whole different part of the world ethnically. And we live on this side, which is on the Gulf. They call it the Arabian Gulf, and the Iranians call it the Persian Gulf, but depends on which side you're on.
Iranians or Arabians?
I'm not sure which is preferred. I guess I go with whatever.
You just hit me, and Iranian? You must be the authority.
No. The town that we live in is called Dhahran, and the reason that I'm there is that I teach at the University of Petroleum and Minerals. Now, that's a Saudi university run by Saudis. It was originally started as a support to the oil company. The oil company is called Aramco, which stands for American Arabian Oil Company. And the university was started to be a support to them, and then they've kind of evolved separately. They've become part of the Ministry of Education, and now it's supposed to be the major technical university in the country. It really should be called something like Saudi Arabian Technical Institute, because it's no longer just concerned with petroleum and minerals. At any rate, the university is rather unique, I think, in that all the instruction except for Islamic studies takes place in English. I don't know of many universities in the world that outside of an English-speaking country where all instruction takes place in that way. So our students come to us having completed 6 years of English instruction in the Saudi schools, and then they have to enter what we call the orientation year. In the orientation year, they take 25 hours a week of English instruction. English is a foreign language. And we try to gear that towards technical, scientific English, rather than conversational skills or, you know, trying to get a date or any of those kind of things. And then after that, if they pass our course, and only about 60% do, if that much, 50 to 60% in a year, we intake 1,400 students and about 700.
And they are in an elite group to start with.
We wish that were so. And they tell us that's the case, but I don't really think so. I think that it's not very difficult to get into the university. But we try to make it somewhat of a hurdle to get through, because if they can't pass our course, then they're not going to be able to do the university studies, especially in English. So then when they go through the orientation year, along with English, they have mechanical, shop, and math, and other preparatory subjects. And then they go on to the university, and then it's a four-year course for them. So all in all, if they follow the normal rule, a normal thing laid out for them, then it's 5 years of study to get a bachelor's degree. Now, what I'm actually teaching in now is I teach the freshman and sophomore level of the university. I teach composition, but for 2 years I did teach in the orientation year. So I'm kind of doing something within the university and getting to see more of it as an operation. There. Now my wife is teaching at the American school, which is very close to where we live. We live on a university campus, which is bounded by a fence, and it's a large area. And right next to our university campus is the American consulate. Consulates are kind of subcategories of an American embassy, and there's the main embassy is in the capital, Riyadh, but the consulate is next door. And on the consulate is an American school, and the school is for American children and any children who want to attend, except Muslim children. And if they are Muslims, then they have to get special permission, and Saudi children cannot attend. So she teaches Americans and others who want to attend. But there are Muslim children there, Pakistanis, and children from other countries. So that's what we're doing there. We've been there for 3 years, and we will be going back for at least one more year. in August, and it's possible that we could sign them the contract, which would keep us there for 2 years beyond that.
May I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
From whom do the Muslim children have to get permission?
Well, then they would go to the local schools. Oh, who do they have to get permission from?
Yes, do they have to
right.
get it from their religion?
I'm not exactly sure who they get it from. It would probably be from the Ministry of Education that they would get special permission to go. The Ministry of Education is an agency of the government.
Of?
For the Saudi government.
Of the Saudi government.
Right. The Muslim schools are very, I should say Saudi schools, but they a lot of the time is spent in teaching the Quran, which is the holy book of Islam. And there's a lot of memorization and so on that goes on there. And another reason that they would have to get special permission, and another reason Saudis can't attend is because the even elementary schools are strictly segregated. Boys go to boys' schools, girls go to girls' schools. And at the American school, of course, everybody's together. So the there's a tight separation there. So that's what I'm doing there, what we're doing there. We have two children, Jenny, who is going to be going into first grade at the school Carol teaches at, and we have a 1.5-year-old who will continue to go to the nursery school that's attached to the school. My perspective of doing these sessions on Islam, on Saudi Arabia, is just simply what I've just explained, is I'm a person who has lived and worked in the Middle East, and what I think I have to share with you, what we're going to try to share with you, is what I think you would see and understand if you were there yourselves. We have no special theological training, or we're not trained as historians or sociologists or political scientists or anything like that, although we do have perspectives on that from living there. I'm a teacher, and an English teacher, and it's very much a layman's perspective, but that's why I think it will be easy to talk, and I'm not trying to come down with a well-thought-out PhD thesis or anything like that. It's just merely what my perceptions have been from being there.
Are you both American?
We're both Americans, right. A lot of people who are at the school, of course, if you're in the English department, you have to be a native speaker of English. But a lot of guys, and all of our faculty, you'll have to excuse me here at Holden if my language tends to get very sexist, because Saudi Arabia is a very sexist society, probably one of the most sexist in that way. All of our faculty are men, all of the students at the school are men. There are women's universities, but they're strictly separated. And if a man teaches at a women's university, he teaches via videotape, so that he talks to a camera and then the session is broadcast to the women. All of our faculty then are men, and a lot of them marry non-Americans or non-Brits. And it's interesting that a lot of people who do marry outside of their culture end up coming to a third culture to teach, because it seems to be neutral ground. Anyway, I think it's important to study about Islam. You people obviously do by attending today. And to study, or just to learn about Muslim countries. It seems very much from just the conversations I've had with people that we tend to have a very determined view of Muslims and Islam as a whole in that part of the world. And it's determined a lot by the press. It's determined by the events of our day. If I just run through a few of the things, we've seen Islam historically as an enemy of Christianity, an enemy of our way of life. If we go back to the Crusades, of the Holy Crusades, so-called, against the infidels in the Holy Lands, trying to recapture them for purity, and we trace that through to what has happened today with, well, for example, the Iranian hostages situation, where our country felt held and humiliated by the Ayatollah and by the students, and we felt powerless in that situation. And the TWA plane hijacking last summer, the Achille Lauro, the whole exchange that's been going on interminably, it seems, in Lebanon with supposedly Christians against Muslims, and most recently, of course, the whole spate of terrorism and the Libyan bombing, then our perception of the Middle East, our perception of Arabs, and I guess of Islam as a religion as a whole tends to be very, very negative. And one of the things I want to do today is just to explore and ask some questions about what people think about Islam and what how much our knowledge is there and how much we think a fair view we get in our country, because it is important. And it seems that with the way things have developed, that our country is getting very militaristic in the region. We've been involved through Israel since the Second World War, but with the Libyan bombing and with the killing, the massacre of our men in Lebanon, the Marines, our country has gotten involved militarily, and it's possible it could be more so. And I think it's very dangerous if people in the country aren't aware of who these people are that we're dealing with and what motivates them. Our knowledge of Islam, and I should say right away that in the Middle East, in that part of the world, any person who lives there would tell you that the key to understanding them is the key to understanding their religion. In our country, we tend to be very pluralistic. People come from different backgrounds. It's okay to be a Christian. It's okay to be, it's okay to be a Jew. It's okay to be other religions. But in that part of the world, everything centers around the religion. The religion is a unifying factor. It gives social roles, identity. It gives values to all the inhabitants of the area, and it reaches into the literature, their perception of their language itself. They see their language as a holy language, the language of the Quran, and things like that. That it really reaches deeply into the Arab mind. So everything comes out of the religion, and they're very different from our society. But if we think about what we know about Islam, it's probably something like it's related to Judaism, it's related to Christianity, which it is, that we know about Mecca as being the center of the religion, and that Muhammad was the prophet from whom the religion came, and that the Quran is the holy book. I just want to play for a moment a tape. I thought it would be...
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I see the situation as a quarrel of brothers in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews, the Gentiles, and the Mohammedans. Now, they must see it somewhat the same. I asked one of the gentlemen there from one of the countries there what he thought about Russia. I said, how are you considering, is your country considering aligning itself with Russia,
mm-hmm.
rather than with the nations that believe in God? And he said, no. And I said, why? And he says, because we believe in God, and mm-hmm. Russia doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always considered that they're getting help from Russia.
Well, some Middle East countries are aligned with Russia. Syria, for example, is receiving vast amounts of aid, Syria and Libya in particular. And that's why our politics with those two countries are at odds.
Do they fear Russia? Or are they just using Russia?
Well, or Russia's using them, I'm not sure.
Well,
but I don't really know all of the intricacies of of world politics as it relates to, you know, the...
Well, you said to understand the religion.
Right. And in that sense of getting back to your point of being brothers going back to the same roots, yes, there is a sense of that. And that's one of the reasons that Saudis are tied to America, even though if we look at it from their perspective, we haven't been the best of friends. But they do see us as a Christian country, believe it or not, and they do see Russia as a satanic country as opposed to them. Now that is not the perception at all, of course, in Iran, where they see us as the great Satan, American way of life, and they trample on the flag and so on. So there's different perceptions in the different Muslim countries. One thing we have to understand from the beginning is that there's a great deal of differences between the different Muslim countries, and I guess that's really obvious from the Iran-Iraq war. They're both Muslims, both countries are, but they come from different traditions in the Islamic world, deeper than the Protestant-Catholic split, and much more violent than that split.
When did Iran change its faith?
She was there years ago, and their family is all in the politics of Iran. They're very wealthy people and had it, and they just thoroughly hate Khomeini. Mm-hmm. And the one that was in there before, they all loved, that worked with the United States. And Khomeini, they think, is insane. They say there's something wrong with him. He's not in his right mind.
Well, later in the week, I want to give a perspective on Shiites and the difference between Shiites and Sunnis, and where their history has come from and why the Shiites are so different from the rest of the Muslim world. But let me just play this tape. This is a tape of a prayer call outside my house, really. We hear this 5 times a day as part of their religion. They send out a prayer call. It used to be by a man standing at the top of a minaret and using his own voice, but now it's all used by a public address system. But the day before I left, I thought it would be interesting just to have this as kind of a visual being audio being there for you.
Contradictory calls. One lane.
Just one. That is what we call the prayer call, and as I said, it is 5 times a day, and the first time is at 4:30 in the morning approximately. And the first morning I woke up hearing this thing, and I burst out of my house. What's going on? I didn't know if it was the Arabian version of a prayer, fire call or what, but nobody had warned me of it, and sooner or later you get used to it. And basically it is come to prayer, come to prayer. They start out with the verse that you maybe heard repeated a couple of times, Allah Akbar, which means God is great. And if I were a true Muslim doing this lecture correctly, I would have started out with the phrase Bismillah Rahim Rahman, which is a phrase that starts every lecture in the Islamic world, which means God is great, God is mighty, God is merciful, basically. And it just gives you...
Gentle justice. Great, mighty, and merciful.
With the emphasis on mighty. And that's a theme that I want to draw out over the week, is the difference I see between Islam and Christianity is the mighty versus the merciful. And if we draw it on continuum, we want to look at and try to place Islam where I've seen it placed, and their conception, perception of God. I just want to refer to this quote that I put up on the blackboard. If there is ever to be a happy and peaceful world, we have all of us got to learn to understand and to love the difficult, the exasperating, and the unlovable. And I think to us as Americans, the Arabs or the Muslims seem to be the exasperating, the difficult, the unlovable. And we don't understand what motivates them, what's important in their world, and why they're blowing up American planes or bombing German airports. And I think it's very important to understand what is their gripe. Why are they? Why do they hate us? And where their religion comes from. Now, the reaction I've gotten from most people is, when I tell them I'm in the Middle East, they're very surprised. And I kind of wanted to see today what people think. What are your perceptions of Muslims? What's your perception of Arabs or Islam as a whole?
Well, the Iranians that I knew, the people from the, I mean, my dearest friend that I had that I met there, and her husband is a bacteriologist at the Arab Clinic. The thing with it is, they really did like the United States, and they're very kind and loving, and they're Christian. In fact, she was in the convent for 2 years in Iran, and they really have a deep dislike for Khomeini.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know, from the way he acts, I mean, the things that he's done, the way he just takes those kids out and throws them out and kills them and everything, he has no compassion or anything. It seems like that. I don't think that. I think he is. I really do. I mean, I just don't understand the man.
Do they hear him so much that they don't hear?
Well, they can't. Their boys or their young men aren't allowed to come over to the United States or anything. One of the girls came over, but the boys aren't allowed to. I mean, it's kind of a strange situation.
With Khomeini, because of the way the war has gone on.
Yeah, yeah, well, for a long time it's been kind of that way. I mean, this is just what I get from what I've heard from her and someone that had there. And I do know that she really loves Jesus and she loves the Lord.
My perception has always been that life is of such little value in our standing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the life isn't in your family.
That's the perception.
Where do you think that comes from, or how do you?
I
think
guess because
that?
It seems like everybody's killing each other and their neighbors, and they say, "I believe this way, I believe that way." We don't have the massive amount of history that they have for all the years, you know, of each little sect of their religion or each different.
Mm.
That it seems like they just kill their neighbor. You know, well, you're. I mean, that's. I'm sure.
No, I think that's very much the vision that we're given of that part of the world. Any others? I'm just curious.
Well, for Sally, in my hometown, three of our doctors have gone over there, and we have exchange students at our universities, and I think of wealth.
Okay, massive wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've never seen any pictures of the cities. Read a lot.
Sure. Well, one thing is photography is generally prohibited, so there's not a lot of pictures that come out. Although I do have a slideshow that's been prepared by the Saudis, and I want to show that.
Why is it prohibited?
Well, I shouldn't say generally prohibited. It's prohibited of women and of the mosques, and they have their own reasons for doing it. They're very protective of their women, and they see it as protection. We see it as
oppression.
Oppression. Yeah.
It strikes me as being real legalistic and real focused on the law and gaining righteousness by doing it all right and making it
strikes me that way too. Although I think, of course, there are those in religion, in any religion, that are legalistic, and there are those who live by the heart.
Yeah.
But I think, as a rule, and we'll go over some things of how they do tend to focus on the outward appearance of the religion.
Are there any women at all that have any power or any status?
Not overtly. Not in Saudi Arabia. I think in some Arab countries it's true. Let me just define the Middle East for you, so we know kind of what we're talking about. Or larger, to start with, defining the Arab world. Islam started in Saudi Arabia. It started in the city of Mecca. Mecca is here, just above the Red Sea. Egypt. I'm supposed to turn over the tape on the.